Hello and welcome to the Soccer Speakeasy. Today is Friday, the 11th of December, 2020. We are a day before the MLS Cup Final. Columbus Crew versus Seattle Sounders at Moffray Stadium. It's an 8:30 kickoff. Fox comes on the air at 8. And it was looking like it was going to be a terrific matchup until the matchup changed. I'm Mike Arias. I'm here with the Dispatch's crew beat writer, Jacob Myers, and of course, Kyle Robertson, photographer, the shield and the striker, if you will. And at the controls, as usual, is Patrick Flaherty, the podfather. The latest news is dark if you're a crew fan. Jacob, take us through what broke yesterday or last night, and then we'll get into the impact, which is going to be quite impactful. Will reverberate.
Thursday night, the crew announced that a second player had a confirmed positive test of COVID-19 this week, and they also released their injury report, which listed Darlington Nagbe and Pedro Santos as not medically cleared to play. So quite a gut punch for a exciting week. I think crew fans were, you know, drinking their emotions maybe a little bit last night. But, you know, there's still a game to play tomorrow. But that is the news, and it is quite dark, as you said.
Kyle, I mean, Santos has been terrific. That loss is huge, and it's hard to imagine a bigger loss. There's only two other possibilities, and one of them is Nagbe, who's as the holding midfielder is the tempo of this team, and the calm of this team, the polish. He's won two cups before. He was going for it with two different teams. He was going for his third. First, could you just talk a little bit about that one? Can it be overcome?
Well, I think the only the only good thing about this is that they're also missing Pedro, because I thought a lot of the problems when Nagbe was out earlier this year is when Pedro was in the middle. I thought he was kind of a wild gun, kind of an up tempo, kind of push it no matter what, and not the slow it down, wait for the right moment, kind of like Nagbe is, and the perfectionist. So I do think that's one side of it, is that you're probably going to have Artur, and I don't even know where they're going to go to fill that spot. You know, I don't know if it's easier to make, you know, to move in, you know, one of the subs in, or you're going to move Artur over to Nagbe's spot. So I think that's going to be the wild card of kind of figuring things out. But like you said, man, it's just brutal. I mean, Santos has been playing really well. You know, he's been scoring and creating chances. So, I mean, you know, I think it's devastating news. I mean, I think it's the worst possible news they can get. You know, maybe Zardes and maybe a goalie, but I mean, Tarbell's been playing well. I mean,
I mean, how about Lucas Celarayán? They're getting him a little bit, Kyle.
That was the other one. Jacob, let me ask you this. If you had to project their lineup right now, and they don't have to release it as yet, obviously that'll come tomorrow sometime in the late afternoon, early evening. But if you had to project their lineup, what would you be looking at?
Yeah, I wrote something for the web this morning on how they might address the absences of Nagbe and Santos. So I think what you're going to see is Fatai Alashe starting in that spot. It's either him or Aiden Morris, who, while Aiden has played well, he's played 360 minutes his entire professional career, and Alashe's played over 107 or over 100 games. He's played 107 games in his MLS career. So I think that's the change you're going to see. To your point, Kyle, I think Artur does have to have probably his career game to counteract the absence of Darlington Nagbe. And then on the wing, I think you'll probably have Emmanuel Boateng as a starter, just because I am not certain of the condition and fitness of Derek Etienne. He was one of the guys during that week where they had a ton of positive COVID cases who was listed as medically not cleared to play. That's one silver lining of all this on the injury report, is all eight players who were listed as not medically cleared to play are off of that list now, not even listed as questionable. So they could also get Aloy Room back if his fitness is up. But I think you'll have Boateng on the left wing, which gives Caleb Porter two wingers who extend the attack and get in behind the defense. He'd rather have a pocket winger, but Yunus Mokhtar has just pretty much been absent. I think he's played 21 minutes in the past six games. He's only played in one game, so he has fallen out of favor. So I expect you'll see some combination of Boateng and Etienne there.
Yeah, I mean, this is why they've deepened their roster, and I'm not saying they can sustain these losses, but
Nagby's irreplaceable. I mean, there's just no one in the league who can quite do what he does at that position.
And he's also, as the coach Caleb Porter is, a veteran of the old Seattle Portland rivalry, those wars in the early years of those franchises. But Kyle, does this change the strategy? Is this one of those situations where, you do, and we've seen it with other teams, lesser teams, if you will, where you're at home and you back up the bus?
I think you could kind of see that. I mean, because they have explosive. If you go with Jacob's, starting lineup, you have pretty explosive wings that can kind of stretch the field, with Boateng and Diaz. And then you got, two guys up front that can put the ball in the back of the net. But I think what you'll see is Porter has been, he's been going with the starting 11, majority of the game. He hasn't made a whole lot of subs. I think this completely throws him off for a loop, and I think you'll see lots of subs if stuff isn't working, especially in the second half, if they're either down a goal or even two. Because he didn't make any subs in the Nashville game until late in the second overtime, and I think he made one sub or two subs in New England. What Boateng came in like in the 80th minute or something like that. So I think that's I think that's going to be the, do you throw in an Aiden Morris in there for the last 30 minutes if you're behind a little bit, do you put another guy up front with Zardes, and do you try to go that way? I mean, who kind of knows?
Jacob, Seb Berhalter is now available. He was not. Might we see him? I know his father's going to be in town. I think he flew directly from Miami up to Columbus.
He might be available and on the game day roster, but I don't expect to see him in. He, after the Toronto game, which I believe he started, Aiden Morris had more action, saw more action than Berhalter, and Fataya Lache was kind of hurt during that time too. So with those two healthy, I don't think so. But to the question you posed to Kyle, I do think Porter will change a bit how they play. And the one kind of game that I have circled and even mentioned in the story on the web this morning was against New York City when they didn't have Nagby or Zellerayan, I believe. And they decided, to your point, Kyle, when Pedro was playing the number 10, they weren't as good in possession. So what they did was just concede possession, the complete opposite of what they normally want to do, and rely on that high press, win balls high, try to create off of that. And they won that game 3-1. I think Artur had a really good game then, if I remember correctly. So I feel like that's the blueprint they might try to use without Nagby in the middle.
That seems like a remnant of their pre-COVID games early in the season when they did press and counter and they didn't put as much emphasis on possession, as I recall. In any case, we can say it out loud in parentheses that no Nagby, no Santos, and no explanation means in all likelihood that they've tested positive for COVID. They're tested every day, these guys. Who knows? We'll see. Maybe there might be another one. You hope not, we'll see how that goes.
Will not provide an update from Friday's round of testing.
We'll know that by game time, I don't think Fox is going on air with them saying no comment about any players who are out of the lineup. Or we'll know who's available and who isn't. In any event, the crew was not the favorite in this game prior to this news. I think the odds are moving in Vegas pretty hard. The latest ones I saw were -145 to +200, which is like giving Seattle like a 60% chance to win, and that may even go up. So that'll tell you how the odds makers are looking at this thing. And it's what you have here, Jacob, is a Seattle team that's appearing in the finals for the fourth time in 5 years. It's almost a birthright in a league that is designed to for parity and for changes in power shifts from year to year. This team has been incredibly consistent to the point of defying the odds of how the very league is set up. You know, the coach, Brian Schmetzer, and we can talk about Ziggy, his longtime assistant, he's going for his third cup. And if they do win it, it'll be his, he'll be number two on the list of all-time coaches, cups for coaches. Bruce Arena, of course, has five. But the point here, Jacob, is this is a powerhouse team, a potentially dynastic team, the way they played since they came in the league in 2009, four U.S. Open Cups, now shooting for their third cup and their, fourth finals appearance in 5 years. That is, there's nothing else quite like it in this modern game. Talk about Seattle a little bit, the fans know, but you know, they have that trio up front with Jordan Morris on the wing, Nicholas Lodero as the attacking mid, and Raul Ruiz Diaz up top. And they are just a handful. I don't know if folks saw the second half of the Western Conference final, but, you know, and that's one of the things, and I'm prattling on here, but one thing that's been forefront in my mind, Jacob, is, okay, if you change your strategy and you sit back and you concede possession, this team goes forward. They go forward hard. And if you give them possession, basically you're giving them kind of free reign to come forward all night. And that sounds like a disastrous recipe.
Yeah. If you think about all the teams in the league that maybe you're able to park the bus, hopefully get out in the counter. Seattle's incredibly good in the counter. So they break, if the Crew decide to try to high press and park it in the back, you know, they break that high press and they're probably out and running. So you mentioned the three guys that really make this machine run. And I don't think it's overstating that, you know, Seattle doesn't have that, I guess, pedigree of success in CONCACAF Champions League. But you could say that they're one of the better teams, certainly the best out of MLS that you would give a shot in the CONCACAF Champions League. Whereas, you know, the Crew going for an MLS Cup, they're first since 2008, obviously, but Seattle might be one of the better teams in North America. So, yeah, it's an incredibly difficult task. Harrison Offal's really going to have his hands full against Jordan Morris. Or is he on the right or the left? He kind of does both, though.
Yeah,
he does switch around. I think when they posted their lineups officially, he's on the left side.
Okay.
But he moves around. I mean, he hit the post in the middle of the field in the game.
He almost destroyed the post with that shot.
But I mean, I think to your point about holding the back line. I mean, I do think the crew is a lot better than Minnesota in their back line. And if Room comes back, so I think they have the experience and the players that they might be able to hold that fort, you know, before it break. But the problem is they scored off set pieces. We've talked all year about the Crew and how they've had a rough time, with conceding goals on set pieces. They scored, basically two goals off set pieces, the last 25 minutes. It's going to be a real interesting to see how – I think it becomes even more of a chess match. And I think Porter likes that. I think he likes that aspect of the game.
Well, Jacob, we have seen the Crew win with their goalie when they had guys out. Eloy Room had which game was that? He had like six saves and five of them were unbelievable.
That was against Philly, and that's a game where I believe Nagby and Zellerayon were both playing, but they were not back at full speed. So,
and they didn't play a full game. They didn't play the full. Yeah. And so we've seen him do that. At that time, Jonathan Mensah was not in the best, was not your most in his most confident bent. And he is now. Jonathan Mensah is playing like a defender of the year presently. And Josh Williams is coming back, coming off what was probably the best game of his life. So, you know, if you want to bend toward look at this from an optimistic angle, they have the goalie and the defenders to hold the fort conceivably. And with Zellerayon, they have a guy that can step into the moment, you presume, and make something happen. It might just take one lightning strike. I think what I'm describing here is the probably the one scenario where the Crew has a chance to win, and it's not outlandish to think that's how it could transpire. And I'll throw that to you, Kyle. It's not a question, but just a general observation.
Yeah, I think they're gonna have to get that first goal. I mean, I think that's gonna be really important for them. I think
it is a soccer game, guys. I mean,
I think if Seattle comes out and gets an early goal, I think they're gonna try to press, and then like Jacob said, you know, Seattle's a really good counter team, and you know, you might be quickly down 2-0 if you try to go, you know, try to go for it. But I think for Crew fans, you know, you need to have a little bit of a luck or hope for some luck. You need to have the soccer gods look down on you and have a moment like the Crew had against them in the 2015, you know, where first couple minutes it's 1-0 off of a weird play to the goalie where the ball goes kind of out but not really out. You know, they need
no,
to
– No, it was out, Kyle. It was out.
You know what I'm saying, though. Yes. Crew fans will say it was out. But
Tony Chani should have gave up, but continue.
Yeah. But, like, I just think they, you know, I think they need to get lucky. I think in sports, some teams just have a little bit of luck. You know, they need to maybe score off a free kick. You know, and it's not like, we've talked about this, it's not like the fans or the home field advantage can like help them. It's not like the crowd can get behind them, you know, and cheer and kind of you know, help them you know, a little bit. So I think that's another kind of disadvantage of 2020 and everything that we're in.
Well, Kyle, another scary thing, well, not scary, perhaps an interesting twist and not a somewhat bitter one if you're a Crew fan, is that Jacob, have we seen the referee assignments?
So they're supposed to come out today. I have not checked yet today, and I'll do it as we speak. But I know there were rumors out there that J.R. Marufo, who was the head ref of the 2015 game, was going to be. I don't know where those started.
And also, no, I there's something to them. Mm. I would give it a high probability from what a source has sent my way via text that Jeremy Marufo is, Kyle, the central referee in this game, and that Corey Parker's on one of the sidelines, and he was the guy that those were the two guys that missed the call on the sideline in 2015. And Marufo, of course, that
the jersey, right?
Yeah, Blanco. Yeah, that was the notorious non-call. Blanco was going around killing people. Should have been run. And Marufo, that game. I was at that game. And, geez, when was it? It was a long time ago. But Marufo accepted a jersey from after giving him a gift of a game. The gift was returned post game, and I think his family knows Blanco's family. But in any case, this is not a referee that Crew fans want to see. In fact, if you talk to longtime hardcore Crew fans, or even someone like Sean Mitchell, who covered the team for years before he went off the grid and pitched a tent in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, or wherever he is now, Kyle.
Tennessee. He's in Tennessee, I think.
Presently in Tennessee. Anyway, yes. You talk to the people who were around back then, seeing Marufo at his finest, so to speak, they'd say if he's the ref, it's a joke. That is just a tone deaf move by the league, and they should be aware of that.
So are you saying the fix is already in?
No, I'm saying that the league, well, I guess, I mean, we've seen what the league can do to the crew over the years. That is the source of, part of the source of the word massive and the meaning of it, which is everyone's against them, and what used to be including ownership and management. But the point here is that, you know, if this building, if they had fans in the stands, now there's going to be people there. It appears the crew are ignoring all kinds of orders from the health department. But anyway, if there were fans at this game, and Marufo was announced pregame as the ref, there would be a hail of detritus hurled onto this field. And as a matter of fact, I think there was at one point. They had to institute new rules for what you could bring into the stadium after a Marufo game. So that would just be ridiculous, and it would add insult to the injury of missing these two players. Well, talking a little bit more about Seattle, guys. Jacob, you've been doing all the lead-in stuff with the coaches and the players. What's their frame of mind? They do have to travel. They were a flat 500, 3-3-3 on the road, and we should mention the crew was 12-1 at this point, including playoff games at home. So there's that. What is Seattle's point of view of all this heading into the game? I would imagine that they're very confident given what they've been doing to teams over the years, and highly confident.
Yeah, I think they absolutely have every right to be confident. As you said, they're the favorite coming into the match before the absences of Nagby and Santos. I actually thought the crew were probably in a little better form, but it doesn't make them, you know, the favorites at all. I just thought it'd be a really well thought out, even game. Adam Jardy's actually, you know, reprised his role as somewhat glorified crew beat writer during this week. He was the one.
All right, Kyle, we got a good crew beat writer back on. It's about time. Jesus.
Well, I was told by a few crew fans, Matt, online last year that they wanted Andrew Erickson back. So there's that.
But get him too.
Yeah.
He chimed in a bit this week. Funny enough, we can talk about this later, but we talked about Don Garber saying they've always believed in the Columbus market. So. That was something we had a chat about, but yes,
you had to bring that up. You know, I was having a good morning.
Well, I was hoping you would not rant about it. That's not the right word, but you know, you have done extensive coverage and analysis of that whole situation. So I always appreciate your viewpoint on that, Mike. Is that the politically correct way of trying to get Mike to chime in on that?
He's the most powerful man in American soccer, and, what's he make, $6-7 million a year? Who am I to say anything? Look, the league was, the long and the short of it, Garber vis-a-vis the crew, was the league was in cahoots with Precourt to move the team. They wanted out of this market, and they were defeated. In the end, Garber comes out looking really smart because he got exactly what he wanted. He got a team in Austin, and he got better owners here, and he got two new stadiums out of the deal. So he's... He's smarter than the rest of us, although he shouldn't. He should never mess with crew fans. I think he learned that. So that is disingenuous to say that he always believed in the market. He said something to the effect to me when after all this was settled 2 years ago that that Columbus had to go through this. That's almost ghoulish to say, and I'll just leave it at that.
To finish up on Seattle, like we talked about Schmetzer, we talk about Jordan Morris, Raul Roy Diaz, Nico Ladero, they are the best, like cream of the crop at what they do. Regardless of the lineup, the crew was going to have a heck of a battle. But to be honest, from the crew standpoint, and I wasn't surprised to hear this, I feel like they kind of wanted their shot at Seattle. Not saying that getting Minnesota would have been any easier or
it would have been. Just say it.
Well, they were in good form. I'm not going to discredit that at all. I would say Reynoso was the best player in the playoffs, even in that game. But the crew, I think, want to play the team who was recently crowned champions to just like lay it all out there. They had said they want to win trophies in this new era. Why not go out and beat the team that just won one last year?
Well, there you go. You know, we should we mentioned Ziggy's game a little earlier. We should bring it up again. The late Ziggy Schmidt, who delivered a cup to Columbus in 2008, and then took a better offer to coach in Seattle and got that franchise off the ground. As I said, he won four U.S. Open Cups and was kind of the heat came down on him because he couldn't win an MLS Cup. And his assistant took over when Ziggy stepped aside. Last time I saw him, Ziggy was here at Cruz Stadium during a reunion 2 years ago. And it was just months later that he died at Christmas time. So thinking of Ziggy, whose name's on the Ring of Honor and who brought glory to Columbus and got the Seattle franchise off the ground. And from the time he became their first coach to this point, the Sounders have made the playoffs every year. And their run of late is extraordinary. So tip of the cap to Ziggy. We'll see who the referees are going to be when they officially announce it. That could be a hilarious little wrinkle. Well, the Crew, the 3 seed in the East, things broke well for them. And after the finals on their home turf, they played the entire playoffs at home, which is a good thing for them, given the way they played on the road. But they finished the season with 41 points in 23 games, 1.78. They did point per game in this crazy year because of not everyone played the same number of games. So 41 points in 23 games for the Crew, 1.78. Seattle was, and this is regular season, 39 points in 22 games, 1.77. The Crew plus 15, Seattle plus 21. They were two of the better teams right at the top in terms of differential. And so under the best of conditions, Jacob, this would have been almost a pick-em with the Crew at home. But with the absence of Darlington Nagbe and Pedro Santos, it's kind of a different story. Your final thoughts, Jacob Myers?
I think I just look at when Darlington Nagbe was out, the Crew was 3-4-2. So under 500, but those 3 wins were at home. So I'm not going to say they're dead in the water. It's certainly an uphill battle. Seattle, I think, is deeper than the Crew is. Like, let's be honest, the Crew is a little ahead of schedule, like we said last time, in this kind of transformation. They thought they had a roster good enough to get to this stage, and now they're here. So, but credit to them for getting this far. I think it'll be, I don't want to use this. It does kind of feel a little bit like a JT got hurt, Cardale came in and won the championship. Like, that would almost be the scenario if the Crew was able to pull this off with two of their better players out. So, look, Crew fans should enjoy Saturday night. It's going to be heart-wrenching and anxiety-filled, but this does not come along very often. So enjoy the moment as you can, and you know, certainly the outcome is dependent on that, but it's remarkable that they're at this stage. And the last thing I guess I'll say is I had a Q&A with Dee Haslam this week and talked about, she had just flatly said no, they didn't expect to be here 2 years in. She talked a little bit about the future of the club, the impact of COVID-19 and the new stadium and all that, as well as their kind of growth in understanding the game of soccer. So there's a lot of stuff we put out this week. Mike's written a lot of good columns as well. So check those out.
Dispatch.com. Kyle, it's not going to be US El Salvador. And by the way, that was an impressive performance with Greg Berhalter is going to need a few teams next year for all practical purposes, given the number of competitions, international competitions. But that was an impressive W in Florida the other night. What was it? The final was 6-0, I think.
I think Jacob said it best. I mean, I think Crew fans need to cherish this moment, but hey, it is 2020. Crazy things have happened all year that will continue to happen until the end of this year, hopefully. So, but I mean, look, you still got two dudes up front who score a lot of goals and make a lot of money. So I think there's even more pressure on Zardes and Lucas I think they need to come through. I think, you know, Zardes and, you know, needs to play one of his better games. And I think you need some magic from Lucas, and maybe it's a free kick goal. Maybe it's, you know, going through the whole entire team and, you know, scoring, you know, who knows.
Kyle, somebody could score 27 seconds into the game.
Yes. So, I just think they need to defend well, have a little bit of luck, you know, puck luck, as they say in hockey, or the soccer gods looking down on them. But, you know, for everyone's sake, I just hope it's a good game.
Jacob, when do you think the Crew was aware that of these positive tests? We're assuming they're positive tests, probably, because that's exactly what happened. When do you think they knew? I ask that because they have time to adjust mentally and strategically. And on top of that, they understand that as much as they and everyone else breaks down these games and the odds makers make the odds, et cetera, that it's a soccer game.
Yeah. So they knew of the first one by Monday night that it was confirmed. And then they knew of the second one yesterday, Thursday. But I'd assume that was an initial positive from Wednesday and then confirmed from Thursday's testing. And that player who tested positive, who was the second player, did train on Wednesday. So there's still that iffy of this yet. There could yet be, you know, another infection or more. They're training, which I guess you can assume that every small detail, there's definitely an incentive, right, to just continue training. You want the game to go off. And they are assuming some risk. But I guess we're not the doctors, so let's assume that they are working in the best of intentions and realize that they can proceed as planned and do it safely. And another thing, just to add, Mike, the Crew have had 33% of their roster test positive for COVID in the past 3 weeks. Reminder that the league did not require any teams to publicly disclose cases. The Crew have done so this year. And the MLSPA executive director, Bob Foose, said yesterday that 20% of the league's players tested positive this year. And I definitely did not see that many publicly disclosed cases throughout the year. So if you want to continue with your league grant, please do. I just gave you a little time there. But yeah, it's full speed ahead to Saturday.
Well, you know, there were rumors earlier this week, even some reporting that there was consideration to not have this game in Columbus at some point, and presumably, Jacob, because of the COVID situation here.
Right. Yeah. And Bembez quickly confirmed that they're going to have the game here and they're going ahead with it. Crew is having fans despite a stay at home order. All things we've mentioned. But yeah, that was something that was considered.
Well, Kyle, here we go. It's another massive situation here in the craziest of years. Here's the Crew, always the underdog, at least through most of this century, and put in a big underdog situation again. We'll see how it goes. For Jacob Myers and Kyle Robertson, I'm Mike Arace. Patrick Flaherty's at the dials there. Gentlemen, shout out your Twitter handles before we sign off.
_ JC Myers.
And K Rob Photo.
Patrick is the Podfather 2. At the Podfather 2. All right, thanks for joining us, everybody. That's the Speakeasy for today. We'll join you at least one more time post-game. Once again, it's I think the kickoff's 8:30. The broadcast on Fox begins at 8 with the pregame. Columbus Crew versus Seattle Sounders. And it's going to take some massive effort for the Crew to beat this powerhouse Seattle team. That's it. From different points of Columbus on this team meeting, Patrick, kick us out of here.